throughout the night across the country.
Blog Talk Radio.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Hey, I'm a little man who preaches for the soul. And everywhere that Mary went, the man was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah!
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
And welcome to Reese on the Radio. It is 1 minute after the hour on this terrible Tuesday. May the 8th, 2012, staff's not here, can't find anybody, so I am here alone. And of course, this puts me in a position where I'm going to have to call our guest, who's going to be on today, and that is a Mr. Dave Ferguson. Now, we're going to, of course, get him on the line, which is what I have to do instead of being able to get somebody on my crew to do it, which is almost impossible to do. So I'm sort of burdened with getting this done. So, again, I don't exactly know how I'm going to get this done, but whatever. We'll get it done. It's what we do here. It's what we do here. It's Reese on the Radio. I'm in charge. I can't put this on anybody else but me. Dave Ferguson, for those of you who don't know, he has his own blog show, and he is... How do I put this? He is a person who is very much involved with the idea of getting more people involved in sports. I guess that's the best way to put it. Anyway, we'll get him on the line right now. Dave Ferguson is going to be our guest, and I'll break down who he is, and of course he'll do that himself. What is it saying? The call failed to be answered. Hold on. I apologize. I got to do this again by myself. Because my producer is nowhere to be found. So anyway, we'll get him into the room now. Here we go. We'll call him right now. And I guess not. We're going to have some trouble getting Mr. Ferguson on the line. Which baffles me because I can't seem to figure out why we would be having trouble. Okay. So, they either gave me the wrong number. Or, okay, here's a backup number. We'll try to get that number here. This is just so typical. This would only happen to me. This only happens to me. This is just my day. All right, we'll try this number and see where we get. Here we go. Okay, here we go. That number's dialing now, and no, we got nothing. Okay, so I guess we're just going to have to move on unless he changed his plans. He was scheduled to call in. We'll see whether or not he does. He tried to contact him, but I guess he didn't. Oh, look, there's my producer. He's here. I can't believe it. Well, let me get my producer the two phone numbers that I need to get him, and I'll tell him to get Mr. Dave Ferguson on the line. You know, whenever you have something planned, it never, ever works out. Whenever you have something planned, it never works out. Never works out. This is just the way things go. JC, that's the number. See if you can get Mr. Dave Ferguson on the line so we can talk to him. If you could. Let me break this down for you. So, we know about the untimely death of former San Diego Charger, former New England Patriot, Junior Seau. He played for Miami, for the Miami Dolphins as well, in the NFL. And Junior Seau shot himself in the chest. He was found by his girlfriend, unresponsive. And it was a reported suicide. And I'm not exactly sure why, but it was, how do I put it? It was strange to me that he would kill himself. But yet, there he was, dead. Same day of his death, they rule it a suicide. And I even went so far as to bet Mike from Florida, one of our avid listeners and a participant of the show, I went so far as to make a bet with him that I bet you this is going to turn out and be foul play. And sure enough, it turns out I'm wrong. It's just ruled a suicide, and that's it. And now, talk has emerged, and all of these reporters have come out and said that what is this going to mean for the NFL? This concussion epidemic, this class action suit. I thought it was just 100 guys. Turns out that there's over 2,000 guys who are part of this class action suit and are suing the NFL. So Dave Ferguson, if indeed we do get him on the phone, and hopefully we will, those are the two numbers I gave you, JC. Hopefully one of them work. They told me that the 877 number was a backup number. Can talk about this because he's what they would call a sports enthusiast, and more importantly, he is a coach, and he is a coach of young people. And those of you who remember the show last week, I said, as I spoke to Derek the Bounty Hunter, who is another avid fan of the sport, played football in high school, that I said that this new targeting of the NFL and the concussions was going to be damaging to the league. And it was going to affect it in the Pop Warner levels and high school and college levels, first and foremost. That those would be the people most affected. And so we'd like to talk to Dave Ferguson about that to get an idea of, well, how he feels about it. Because there is a new, quote-unquote, sensor technology that people are using on helmets for college players, or some colleges or some schools are using this. I believe it's high school players, in fact. We'll get that info from them. But, and whether or not this sensor program is going to be used in the NFL, and how that will affect the game. Will that then say, hey, look, since we're using these new sensors, will it make the game easier to detect when someone may have had a severe concussion, what the impact was? We can take them out of the game. We can sit them out for a few games. And maybe that will curb the quote-unquote epidemic. And we're not exactly sure. So again, we'll talk to Dave Ferguson about that. You see, I'm one of those people who tends to believe that overregulation of anything tends to harm it. And from what we've seen, It's not just possible, it's definite that over-regulation harms everything. Now, I'm not saying that they should have the days of yore where a guy could go out there, you know, and clothesline a guy. You know, but there were some guys out there who played with, you know, broken bones. Most recently, to give you a synopsis of a guy who I love, who can't seem to get a break, is a guy like Terrell Owens. This guy played with a broken ankle and had 9 catches for 122 yards in a Super Bowl he lost when he played for the Philadelphia Eagles. There are no days like that now. Now you get a little toe jam. You jam your toe on the turf. Oh, my toe! I can't play! 6 weeks. Bum ass. Now, look, you know what you're getting into when you get into this game. Look, we have Dave Ferguson on the line. Let's talk to him, because I'm going to ramble on, because you know how I feel about this overregulation. So let's talk to him now. Dave Ferguson, you are Reese on the radio. Thank you for spending some time with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate that.
No, not at all. Now, look, let's go into who it is that you are. Let the audience know what your background is as far as your affiliation to sports.
Okay, it's I've been running a sports radio show for a number of years. Most recently, it's been on Blog Talk Radio for the past two or three years now, and BeyondTheCheers.com is the name of the show. My background in sports goes back as not only a parent, but certainly a coach, trainer, board member for over 20 years with different sports. I've been involved with football, hockey, baseball, lacrosse, tennis, soccer, in various capacities over the past 20-plus years. The show that I do have, it's a sports show that talks pretty much about everything involving sports, you know, from athletes with breast cancer and, of course, right to the hot topic of today is concussions.
Right. And let's get into that a little bit, because what you're detailing, I mean, what you've been talking about recently has been talking about some changes that could possibly come to the game, and that you're referred to as a sports fundamentalist, and I like that term. And you're talking about some changes that are coming to the game in the area of sensors in the future. Now,
right.
From what we've heard, that sensors have been used in some facets of the game. Can you tell us a little bit about where it is being used or where it is being tried out?
Sure. There's just to give you a bit of background on sensors, and there's a myriad of them coming out of the woodwork. There's a couple of companies out of Canada that have a sensor that goes inside the helmet. Excuse me. There's a sensor that goes on the outside of the helmet. That company that also manufactures or will be manufacturing shortly ones that are mouth guard sensors. And then there's some in the U.S. marketplace that are manufacturing chin strap sensors and also sensors themselves by the helmet manufacturers that are getting into this sort of thing. Where it's been tested thus far is basically at the amateur or grassroots level of a number of sports, more predominantly, of course, in the two most ones that seem to have a fair number of concussions in them, which is, of course, hockey and football. There are other sports, alpine skiing, they've been tested in, and there's other markets that they're going to be testing them in now. But those are the two major markets they've been testing them in at this point in time, gathering research, and some of them have been gathering research for 3 to 5 years. Some of the background on the one out of Ottawa is basically based on military utilization that was done by the U.S. and Canadian militaries that were embedded in soldiers' helmets and could tell if they were rendered a concussive incident when they were near a blast that may have occurred.
Now, this information will be helpful to, like, sideline doctors or physicians if this does, of course, if they do implement this on any level. This will give doctors pretty much a digital view of how hard the hit was to the head or the chin, as you discussed, on any area of the body, which pretty much would give them an outline, more or less a better view, other than asking a guy, you know, to look at a pen and look to your left or right, or if he can stand up and walk.
Exactly.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. That sounds like a good idea to me.
Yeah, they're still in the crawl stages now. There are one particular manufacturer is getting into a lot of the retail sectors and shoveling these out at $39.95 a pop. There is good and bad with these sensors. Now, the good part is it's raising awareness. Some of the companies that are manufacturing these are going out and flogging the heck out of it, and also bringing, of course, more attention and awareness as if there wasn't enough already to concussions and concussive incidents. The medical community has raised, put a flag on the field, basically, if you will, with these devices. Sure, they will register a hit to the head, whether it's rotational, angular, or linear acceleration hit. Measured upon G forces of acceleration to the impacting on the head. The negative component of it is I may have a different threshold due to my size, stature, genetic makeup versus what you may have.
Right.
So if I get hit a certain way, I'm probably good as gold. And if you get hit exactly the same way, you could have a possible concussive incident. The other negative component is with it is that not all hits to the head, all hits to the head certainly may possibly give you a concussive incident, but also hits to the body can give you a whiplash effect, which jiggles the juice or the jello, if you will, in your head. That could also render you a concussive incident, which will not be registered on these devices.
Okay, we're on the phone with Dave Ferguson, a sports fundamentalist, and we're talking about the new technology that's being, tried out there in the world in extreme sports, or for that in full contact sports. Mr. Ferguson, let me ask you this, and let's get to the nitty gritty. It's important. You've heard the story about the class action lawsuits, and most of them dealing, Dave Duerson, and of course most recently dealing with Junior Seau. There are a lot of reporters out there, from ESPN to Fox Sports News to Yahoo Sports, some of the biggest names in this sport, who are talking about concussions, and this class action suit to boot is gaining a lot of attention. I've got to ask you a question. Where do you see this harming? And maybe you don't, but I do. Where do you see this harming the sport where you've coached, I guess, with the younger and amateur sports? Do you see, I guess would be a better question, do you see this harming the Pop Warner, the high school, and the college sport, for that matter? Because parents, with this class action lawsuit getting so much attention and the reporters writing about it, keeping their kids away from football.
Okay, I can answer that a couple different ways. Number one, I don't see it having a huge detriment on football because any kid, any person getting into a contact sport like football or any other contact sport for that matter know the risks before they even step foot on the field. They know that there might be head-to-head collisions. They know there's going to be 300-pound guys piling on top of them. They know all of that sort of thing. It's almost like if you want to compare it to something else. If you look at the big scare with asbestos in homes a number of years ago, and we got smarter, medically, scientifically, educationally wise, with regards to dealing with asbestos. Now asbestos has gone out. There were buckets of lawsuits back then, but they never came to fruition because we didn't know back then. Simply, some of these guys that are retired now and they got into the sport knowing full risk what was going to happen. Now they're going to try and milk some more stuff out of the system because they were rendered, concussive incidents throughout the time. But there's no proof that they had concussions unless they still have underlying symptoms, which is quite possible.
But see,
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, you finished that last statement.
I don't see this as having a detriment to the sport in that fashion. Sure, it's going to garner a lot of media attention. It's going to gain traction for a while. It may give a bit of a black eye, but I don't see it's going to be a knockout punch to football in general in any way, shape, or form. The awareness is a good thing. I have been in conversations with GMs and owners of football franchises and things of that nature, all in the same breath here, that do not, and I stress do not, want their children to play the sport that puts food on their table and roof over their head and clothes on their back. So, that's kind of an oxymoron with people like that coming out and saying stuff like that.
That's exactly where it is that I'm coming from, because see, today we live in a helicopter parent society. And, the kids can't be in a class where a kid may have a peanut butter sandwich because the kid's got peanut allergies, so they ban peanuts. I mean, Massachusetts is getting rid of a bake sale for kids to buy football equipment or lacrosse equipment because there's an obesity problem in the nanny state sort of society. When you've got recognizable names like Jim McMahon, Harry Carson of the New York Giants, there are some big names who are associated with this class action lawsuit who are coming out now talking about this concussion epidemic, and you have these writers, and I hate to use the term liberal, but there are a lot of these liberal writers from ESPN and especially from Yahoo Sports who are sitting in there writing, guys who've never played the game, who only spectate, who are talking about, oh, how horrible it is that these guys can't remember how to get back home to their houses, can't remember their kids' names. There was a report yesterday about Dave Duerson's son talking about how violent his father was. These things are going to affect the sport. And I'm more concerned about, the NFL and a guy like Roger Goodell, who you've seen who's been probably more regulatory than Paul Tagliabue could ever imagine. This guy, he's really strict, and he has a CYA mentality. And I speak of Roger Goodell. He has a CYA mentality. This is a huge lawsuit. He doesn't want to smear the NFL on his watch. He is going to cover his behind as best as possible. And that's why I think there's going to be some major restrictions. And you can confirm this if you want. I mean, if you can. I hear that in the next couple of years, they're going to get rid of the kickoff return and begin the game at the 20-yard line. Have you heard that?
I have. And, I do find a lot of that stuff is ridiculous. There's a gentleman that played in the NFL for a number of years. His name is Bobby Hosea. He's out in California. He is educating kids how to give and receive hits properly without injury, without possible concussive incidents. He now has a number of graduates in the NFL, and they've been in there for a few years. And touch wood, as I'm talking to you right now, they have not had are injury prone. They are not or have not received any concussive incidents at all because they know how to give and receive a hit properly. And I think that is somewhere where we need to get some of these, even take it back down to the grassroots level. You've got volunteer coaches that may have played the sport. They may have read a book on how to give and receive and how to tackle and all that sort of stuff. The kids need to be educated better so they don't put themselves at jeopardy. And I think if that comes through, with a bunch of other things, of course, too. But I think if that comes through, I think that will tidy up the game. And you don't need to change rules.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But I think, again, we're talking about a really political correctness regime in guys like Roger Goodell and the NFL, staff right now. It's a different place. I mean, the way that they responded to the Saints bounty, scandal or bounty gate is a perfect example of what it is that we're going to see in the near future. Here, let me ask you another question. And because I don't know if you're familiar with the show, if you're not, there's always on my show, it's racism all the time on Reese on the Radio, but I have to ask you an important question and it pertains to race. Now, because of what I know about helicopter parents and which are more prone in white families or more Caucasian families, the NFL to the black community and to some of these kids who go to traditionally black colleges like Grambling and some of these black students who go to Auburn or go to Alabama, and you know who they are, go to Mississippi, this game is the bread and butter for African-American kids. They use this game to get out of poverty, as they do for the NCAA for basketball.
Basketball.
They use this sport. This is a get out of ghetto free card for them. Do you see, and with that element, as I just proposed about the helicopter parent, do you think that there will be a racial shift within the sport because of parents who will pull their children out for a while until the game gets safer? And where more and more African-American kids will be in the sport or involved in, like, a racial shift in the sport because of that sort of, I want to say, that apprehensive nature of a lot of parents.
Gosh, that's a loaded question, and I hate, I would hate to see that, because it's having the sport shift to the one way, as you'd mentioned, with more African-Americans playing the sport. You possibly could see it, it would be a detriment to the sport. You'd lose an awful lot of talent. And I think that, some of the athletes themselves, regardless of whether they've got helicopter parents or not, and the kids, they need to, forge ahead and just still follow the dream, regardless of what color they are, and just make sure that they're still playing the sport they love, you know, regardless of what their parents may or may want them to do.
Yeah, because I see, for me personally, I see this because I'm not suggesting that most African Americans who play those sports do it only because they need to get they're not all poor. I mean, God forbid they made it into college. They must have some means, be it scholarship or whatever. But a lot of them do clearly do that. I think I'm just saying I know that more African Americans will look at this and go, look, that's the risk that you take when you play the sport. Where on the other hand, I believe that, and I say this because I'm talking at the high school level and at the younger levels, I think that Pop Warner for a lot of kids, because I believe kids need organized sport as a way of life. It's something that you have to have kids be involved in. But I think that all of this is going to get the wrong attention. And you know, even a better question, Mr. Ferguson, let me ask you this. What is a way to combat that negative attention that this lawsuit may bring?
I think I'm not sure what they're really going to do. I mean, they probably could, recognize that, have they really come out and said exactly what they're looking for? There's a suit. Has it been spelled out in black and white what they're looking for to get the NFL to get back? Are they looking for medical attention?
Yeah,
are they looking for another handout?
I believe that what they're trying to do is to create what would be considered a retirement plan or an insurance coverage for anyone who joins the sport. If you get into the sport and let's take a perfect example, the tenure program in schools, like for teachers, you know, you play 5 successful years in the NFL and you leave because you're injured or you sustain a career-ending injury, then you're taken care of for the rest of your life.
Well, isn't that what the NFLPA is supposed to be doing? Don't they have that sort of stuff in there now?
I believe that they do, but it isn't. I don't think that the coverage is as great because the Players Association, you know, that generally works for the guys who are playing, who are current players now. It works more for them. There are a lot of people who have left the NFL, as you know, who've gone completely broke. And is just, you know, they want medical coverage out the wazoo. They want full protection after they, as far as the lawsuit is concerned, after they put their bodies on the line for the sport to make millions, if not billions of dollars for the NFL. So I think that's generally what it's for.
Yeah, and I go back to what I originally said. You know, I firmly believe, you know, they knew all of this going in. They signed the dotted line. Everybody wants to get to the pro level. You know, whether it's NFL, NHL, soccer, baseball, they all want to get to the top and go to the pro level. And they don't really care what they've got to do to be at that level. And, you know, they know the risks going in. I don't, you know, if they sign their long-term contracts, they've had all the agreements and so on and so forth. It's like going back after you've retired and then, you know, like they're doing now, as you say, you know, with the company you work for, well, gee whiz, you know, I'm not doing well enough financially. I need more. I'm getting a lot of medical attention and things of that nature because I spent X number of years working for your company. It's the same sort of thing, unless they can come right down and basically prove it all out. But I don't think they're going to get other than media attention. I don't think they're going to get too much at all.
Well, I really hope that it doesn't affect the sport. A lot of young kids love watching football. Some of the kids who watch football can't wait to put on those pads and get out there and play the game. They want to be those guys. You know, I don't have a real athletic bone in my body, but you know what? I love, you know, wide receivers, my favorite position. And quarterbacking is the most glamorous job in the world. You can't help but really, you know, like, you know, a great quarterback. You live for it. I grew up with Joe Montana. I grew up with Phil Sims. You know, you can't, they're my heroes. They are. And I just don't want to see the damage come to the sport. Where can we catch your show, Mr. Dave Ferguson?
It's just if you go to beyondthecheers.com, that's got all the information you need to know in one-stop shopping. You can get in touch with me. You can grab me on the Facebook page, Twitter, dig it. I'm just beyondthecheers.com is the best place to go.
Okay. We appreciate your time, and thank you for being our guest on the show. And
and being able to answer what I would consider a very sensitive question. I know the race question was a tough one, but that's just the question that's been eating at me for a while. So I wanted to ask someone who's sort of like engrossed into the game and whether or not you can answer that, because a lot of people are afraid of that component of the game. Being an African-American myself and knowing a lot of young guys who played the sport as African-Americans, I know the way that they look at this sport. I know they look at it differently culturally. They look at it from a different perspective.
Yeah.
But we appreciate your time.
Right.
We will check you out. When's your show on, by the way?
Every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Oh, so we can check it out before my show. All right. Dave Ferguson, sports fundamentalist, we thank you for your call, man, and thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
All right, man, no problem. All right, that's Dave Ferguson, sports fundamentalist. I'm glad that he could answer that question because, you know, I had to bring it up. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to my intrepid crew about the interview and what they think about the, what they think about sports in general. We'll be back with Reese on the Radio.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese. I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward. And the state of our union is strong.
Three years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours, a great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights, on blogtalkradio.com.
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right, ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
Reese on the Radio, and we are back 36 minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. Have to say that, .com. Terrible Tuesday, May the 8th, 2012. Just want to let everybody know that I will not be seeing the movie Battleship. Not that that's important. I will not, again, repeat, will not be seeing the movie Battleship. Just want to make sure everybody knows. In case you didn't hear me, I will not, I repeat, will not be seeing the movie Battleship. That is a wrap. Okay. This story makes me go, what? And it will make you go, what? As well. If you haven't followed this story, I don't know where you've been. But there's a woman by the name of Elizabeth Warren. Some people may remember her because the Obama campaign had dragged her raggedy behind in to be the czar of consumer affairs, so to speak. She was going to, you know, she was pretty much going to be out there to protect consumers from businesses. That didn't happen, so they chucked their ass up to Massachusetts to run against Republican Scott Brown. And she got up there and she made a whole bunch of rigmarole talking about how companies are not people, corporations are not people. She's a real socialist broad. She talked a whole bunch of crap. Somebody over at the Boston Herald, God bless him. I've had my wars with him. But somebody at the Boston Herald dug up some background on Elizabeth Warren. And it turns out that she had labeled herself a minority. We've talked about this. She claimed that she was 1/32nd Cherokee. 1/32nd Cherokee. Thanks to her great-great-great-great-grandmother. When she was asked about it, she went so far as to make some claim that her aunt, her mother's sister or something, or grandmother's sister, I don't know who it was, said that she passed by a picture of her mother or her great-grandma, whatever it was, and said that she had high cheekbones like all Native Americans do. That's how they discern that her mother was part Cherokee because she had high cheekbones like all Indians do. And the country laughed and laughed and laughed. You racist bitch. That's what you are. I'd like you to know, what does the one feature that all black people have? When she got up there and says, I knew I was 132nd African American because my aunt and my peepaw looked at a picture of my mother and said, she's got big lips like all African Americans do. Or she had a big booty like all the Negroes did at that time. What would you have said? High cheekbones? What are we, stupid? But you'd think it would stop there. Oh, the laughter would just, that would be, it would finally subside. But it gained attention. It started getting attention. People started calling, ah, you got to prove this. You're part Cherokee. She was claiming herself as a minority at Harvard University. Claiming herself as a minority. Of course, to get special privileges, which is what they do at Harvard University. They give special privileges if you're part minority. So she said that her heritage was Cherokee. So then this story comes out today. And the headline reads, law professor Warren's ancestor rounded up Cherokee before Trail of Tears. Now, anybody who knows your Indian heritage knows what the Trail of Tears are. Cornell Law student Professor William A. Jacobson, citing a genealogist, claimed today that Massachusetts Senate hopeful Elizabeth Warren's ancestry includes a great-great-grandfather who helped round up Cherokees in the days leading to the Trail of Tears. Warren has struggled to prove her American Indian ancestry since it was revealed more than a week ago that she had referred to herself as a Native American minority in the 1980s and 90s. Quote, in what may be the ultimate and cruelest irony, it turns out that Warren's great-great-great-grandfather was a member of a militia which participated in rounding up Cherokees in the prelude to the Trail of Tears. The Trail of Tears is the name given to the forced relocation of Native Americans after the Indian Removal Act of 1830, which led to the death of thousands of Indians. Jacobson explained that this information was learned after Warren's campaign claimed last week that her great-great-great-grandmother, O.C. Sarah Smith Crawford, was herself a Cherokee Indian. Yeah. Citing writer and genealogist Michael Patrick Leahy, he reported that a review of that ancestor's heritage revealed that her husband, Jonathan Crawford, apparently participated in the removal of Cherokees from Georgia. It's sort of like an African-American saying, oh, it was my African ancestors who were kings in Africa, and finding out that they were slave traders. It's classic. I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. I can't stop loving it. It turns out that Elizabeth Warren's ancestors were on the wrong side of history. And no, she wasn't an Indian. Oh, I'm sorry. And it gets worse. That the 1830 census, the 1830 census says that her great-great-great-grandmother listed herself as white.
Oh, my gosh.
Not a white Indian. This has got to be an embarrassment, JC.
Well, that it is. That is absolutely horrible.
How could that possibly happen to you?
It couldn't have happened to a better person, though.
It couldn't have happened to a better person. I love it. And you know, now she went to Harvard. She was in Harvard during the time that good old Barack Obama was down there.
Had she nothing to do with him. You're not going to blame this on him.
Oh, I'm not blaming it on him, but he brought her to the White House to bring her to be the czar of consumer affairs. Come on. A lying ass. Come on, James. Have a good laugh with me. Kool-Aid Man is here. Hey, it's some Mary Mary Whitey Bucks. Come on, James. Have a laugh with me. What's it like to find out? You're telling everybody that you're one of those poor, poverty-stricken people You were a Native American, and lo and behold, you were the one that drove those poor Cherokee Indians out of there. Yeah, mule! Come on,
well, you know what? That's why they have this show. You know, there's this new reality show called Who Do You Think You Are?
Exactly. Yeah, I know.
When you actually find out. But then again, you know what? You can't say that she, first and foremost, 160 whatever.
130 seconds.
Yeah, well, whatever. That's, I mean, come on. Did you really think that was going to injure you to other people or to minorities? You're 160 second, 130
seconds.
That's not even a full. That's not even a full fraction.
I know it's not a full fraction. That's what I love about it. But the fact that she would claim it on an application at college,
and then to be wrong about it.
And be wrong about it and find out you're on the other side of history on this one. Hey, you, Sitting Bull, move your ass. What are you doing? Come on, join the rest of the group.
See, the thing is, that's what it is. It's the rampant pandering of politicians nowadays, mm-hmm. where you just have to say or do anything to get the vote.
I know, it's disgusting. Sacagawea, what are you doing? Stop picking up corn. What are you doing? Get out now. You eat later. I'm sorry, go on. It's pathetic. I love it. I found the new Indian name for her. I call her Spreading Bull.
Spreading Bull.
It's pathetic. I can't stand it. It's pathetic.
No.
1/32nd Indian. And the way she explains it is by saying that her peepaw said that she had high cheekbones.
Yeah.
That's the thing that kills me is the high cheekbone deal. I mean, I don't claim it.
Well, that's just like saying, you know, when back in.
I lost somebody.
I think we lost him. I was going to say, I don't claim it, and my Indian heritage runs way deeper.
I don't know whether or not I have any Indian, but I don't care.
I know I do. In fact, I have it on both sides of my mom's family. My mother's father is Blackfoot. No. Yeah, Blackfoot. And
we
my mother.
Gout?
No. No. Yeah, she has like a light brownish red foot.
Redfoot? What do you got, athlete's foot? What's wrong with you people? Blackfoot?
And,
no, that would be Greenfoot.
Oh, Greenfoot? and my grandmother's family of Narragansett Indian.
Now that's a real... Now, I know a guy. I went to a restaurant in... I know a guy. Hold on. No, listen.
I went to a restaurant, and I know a friend of a friend.
Oh, no, he's no friend of mine. But I met a guy. I shouldn't say I know him. But I met a guy. I went to a restaurant in Rhode Island.
That's where we're from.
He was my server. And I don't know what his name was. He had a very, very interesting name. It was like Najimi or something like that. And he was Narragansett.
Yeah,
he was a Narragansett Indian. He was. And
yeah.
I was actually surprised because, I don't know, call me stereotypical, but, I mean, you know, when I think of Native Americans, I think of the long, straight hair with a tear coming down their cheek telling me not to litter. I mean, I don't know.
Well, that would have been my grandfather and his mother.
I don't know.
That would have been my grandfather and his mother.
Some guy with a feather in his hair obsessed with headbands. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's just like me saying that just because I have dreads, I'm Jamaican.
Oh, that's the other side of my family.
Oh, damn it.
I have the hair.
No, my father's mother was born in Barbados, raised in Jamaica, and then left Jamaica for Georgia.
What is your family? You must come from the color form family.
Dark box of crayons.
Exactly.
We're like, a dark box of crayons. Yeah.
Nowadays, everybody can find a trace their lineage back to something.
Your tribe was called Crayola. It's horrible. Anyway, going back to Dave Ferguson, just to go back to that in the last 10 minutes before the top of the hour, you guys heard the interview that we were talking about. Do you agree with Dave Ferguson that he says he doesn't believe that it's going to affect the Pop Warner level or the youth level of organized sports, especially in the area of football and hockey? Do you agree with that?
I agree. I agree.
You do?
Yes.
Well, why? I don't understand. Why wouldn't you think that it would happen, considering the people's knee-jerk reactions to stuff like this?
Well, knee-jerk reactions aside, the fact of the matter is there is a difference between Pop Warner and pro. All right? This is not a 300-pound man hitting you full in the face, hitting another 300-pound man or 250-pound man. These are children.
Yeah, exactly. A 45-pound kid, a 45-pound kid running into another 45-pound kid with a 20-pound helmet.
With a 25-pound helmet. But you know what? Most of these kids aren't trying to hit somebody like that anyway. They're more afraid of hurting somebody. They're more afraid of hurting somebody than the coaches and their parents.
Well, okay, so let's talk about the cultural ramifications, as I discussed with Dave Ferguson. When I said the whole thing about it culturally, white parents, and I don't mean to make it a real racial component, but it's true. White parents have a tendency to be helicopter parents, where black kids use sport as a form of getting out of their financial or fiscal troubles growing up. A lot of those kids are poor. No, come on. You look at those kids in Mississippi.
Come on, man.
Come on. You have to consider that. Wait a minute, James. Listen to how many stories you hear in those NFL exposés when they talk about those players, you know, and they talk about how they grew up in a one-parent household, and they were poor, they were struggling, and the first thing they ever did. In fact, Deion Sanders, at the Hall of Fame inductee, when he was a Hall of Fame inductee, Shannon Sharp, when he was there with his brother, Sterling Sharp, and they were talking about growing up with their mom and when they were poor, and how they went and got their mom their first house. And they were talking about poor. There are a lot of guys who are prominent in the sports who grew up poor who use the NFL as a means to get out of poverty. And I'm saying that there's a different level culturally when they join the sport. There are some white parents who know their kids don't have to play the sport. Those kids love the sport. Where black kids, although they love the sport, use sports as a means to get them out of financial difficulty. You have to admit that that's true, James. Whether we like it or not, it's true.
Whether we like it or not, and no, because a lot of those people, again, they are writing books, and it sells more books. It's a greater story to tell. But a lot of those children weren't as financially and culturally strapped as they want to make it out to be. Okay, nowadays there are. And it's no longer just getting out of the ghetto. They just want to make the money so they can stay in the ghetto and show everybody else, look.
That almost sounds sick.
That sounds worse than what we're saying. I'm surprised that's coming from you.
It sounds worse, but, I mean, look, once again, I'm so tired of it. It's just, you know, the kid who was – coming up and pulled himself out of the by his bootstraps, yeah, it is a good story. It's a good story. It sells books. It sells tickets. And it's also a way to handicap you.
Yeah, but see, what I'm saying here, James, is with this class action lawsuit, the racial component is going to happen. And understand where I'm coming from when I say
you're breaking up.
Yeah, where did that come from?
Oh, I was uploading an audio. That's probably why. How about now? Am I okay?
Yeah.
Say again?
No, I said I was wondering whether or not I was okay. I was uploading audio that I'm going to play in a minute. How about now? Am I better?
Yeah.
All right, but back to my point. There are some people who are going to start talking about how football racially is causing these young kids to put themselves into harm's way as a means to get out of their situation, and the NFL not taking care of them after they've given all of these white NFL corporate owners billions of dollars, that the NFL doesn't care about these poor black kids who got injured in the game. They're going to use guys like Dave Duerson and especially guys like Junior Seau, minorities who were a part of this class action suit, Harry Carson, who's now a part of the suit. They're going to use this with some racial components. Trust me when I tell you, liberalism.
Well, I know that. I do know that. However, and I tend to agree with Dave Fugerson here, where it's more going to be along the lines of people just jumping on the bandwagon.
Well, yeah, of course, but listen to what he said about some NFL owners that he knows. They won't even let their kids play the sport now. Because, of course, those kids don't need to. Those kids don't need to. And if that ever gets out, that they won't even let their own children play. I almost fashion it as when Michael Moore did Fahrenheit 9/11, and he was making that claim that there were U.S. senators that were eager to go to war in Iraq but didn't have any family members who were in the military. You know? It's sort of like, you know what I'm saying, they're going to use that sort of same ideology that says, oh, look, you own an NFL team, but you wouldn't even let your kids play because you think, you know, it's so dangerous. There are going to be those activists out there, and that's where I think it's going to affect it.
Well, see, the thing is, and again, as far as Pop Warner goes, it's going to be maybe the parents who put more emphasis on this than the kids, because all the kids want to do is just play the game.
That's right. I know that. Trust me, I know that. If any kid wants to put on that equipment and go out there, it's because he loves the game and he wants to be a part of it. He wants to be that star athlete because he watches the game and he loves the game. But parents, they're the ones who watch the news. They're the ones who listen to these reports. They're the ones that hear the conversation, the water cooler conversation comes to them. And they're going to have that kid who comes home one day and say, hey, Dad, hey, Mom, can I join the football team? And that's going to be sitting there floating in the back of their head, and they're going to go, nah, I don't think so. Do you know how dangerous this sport is? And they're going to scare those kids out of the game.
Well, then, but see, that's just it. They may want to take their kids out of the game, but their kids are going to still want to play.
Oh, I agree. I know they're still going to want to play. But the kids are not going to be able to play if the parents don't let them. That's my point.
You know what? Again, you seem to fail to recognize the resourcefulness of your child. All right, if they want to play, they're going to play.
Yeah, I agree with you there. They're going to find a way to play. If they don't do it in Pop Warner, if they don't do it in high school, well, they got to do it in high school. I'm sure they'll probably do it in high school. Parents will have less cover of their children in high school. The kid wants to play, he's going to play. As a parent, I wouldn't let my kid not play. You know, this is something that they love. I'm a believer that organized sports breeds good character. So I'm that parent who wants my kid to play. So,
I want my kid to play because, you know, there is a lot of positives that go along with playing on a team. Any team in any sport.
It's good for them. It is. It's good for them. All right, let's take a break when we come back. It's Reese on the Radio. We'll talk about Jimi Hendrix and a prediction that I said would come true is. It's Reese on the Radio.
Park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Mary had a little lamb in Christmas white as snow. And everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
Ah!
I never once said, na da da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I help sinned against you.
It's Reese on the Radio, and we're back 1 minute after the hour on this terrible Tuesday, May the 8th, 2012. I don't know whether or not you guys heard this today, but it has been announced that in the coming weeks, they will be starting to film the story of famed 60s and early 70s rock legend Jimi Hendrix, and they've casted who will play Jimi Hendrix. Anybody got any clues on who's going to play him?
Chris!
No, I mean, you got to go with the obvious. I would think Kravitz.
Okay, so you call Lenny Kravitz, James,
well, I have two people, two potential people.
Well, you only can pick one, so pick them now.
Andre 2000.
Okay, James, you got who? Prince?
Yeah.
All right, Mary, who do you got?
I don't know. I have no clue.
All right.
Don't say Cuba Gooding Jr.
Okay.
I'm a guy Piper.
The winner is JC. It is Andre 3000.
He looks like
wow.
I've always said it. I've been saying it for years. This movie has been on hold for almost a decade. Almost a decade because they couldn't release some of the music for the film. And they were having all of these negotiations, and finally, they finally
got the
right.
Well, they had to find the right person to play it. And the thing is, I think Andre can pull it off.
I'm a positive he can pull it off. I think he's the perfect person. Look, with the way that he's transformed himself with the Aquemini album and, you know, when he started to change his whole image with the wild hair and the wild outfits. I mean, the guy literally reeked of Jimi Hendrix inspiration. I mean, it was perfect for him to be cast.
Yeah. No, but that's that rub off of that damn wacky chick, his baby mama.
Oh, Erykah Badu?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? He's always really had a very eccentric style anyway. I mean, you kind of look at him, and there's something about him that sort of has that essence of sort of like the, you know, I mean, I want to call it eclectic, but I mean, there's no other way to put it. He's kind of weird.
The man can do it all.
Yeah, but he's kind of weird, but in a good way. He's a good weird.
Yeah.
You know, he's like all over the place. He's, you know, I consider him, you know, sort of like the, I would consider him the prince of hip-hop, to be honest. I mean, he's got sort of like a
you know, Prince and the Revolution vibe in his music.
Prince and the Revolution, Prince and the Time, Prince and what was the group after the Revolution? It was
I don't even know what they were called.
New Power Generation.
New Power Generation.
New Power Generation. Yes.
Yeah. Perfect example.
Somebody who's a chameleon.
Mm-hmm.
And yet stays with his, constantly reinvents himself.
Yes.
And yet stays within his roots.
And is clearly, he's grown so beyond the outcast mold, you know, that he's become sort of a star and a celebrity on his own. That, and that's kind of what I like about him. You know, and he's been, you know, he's had a couple of acting roles. What did he have that movie? You know, Four Brothers. He was in The Italian Job. No, that's not him. That's Mos Def. I apologize.
That's another one right there too.
Mos Def.
Mos Def played. Mos Def played Chuck Berry.
Yes, he did.
He did a damn good job with that.
He did. He did a great job in Cadillac Records. He was brilliant in that. Yeah, the two of them, I give it to them. They're kind of the guys that you want to pull in to do sort of like a retrospective of famous black artists of yore. I thought it was perfect casting. I said in the beginning when there were talks about it back in 2004, I believe, there were talks about somebody doing a Jimi Hendrix movie, and everybody said Andre 3000 was the first person that you cast. And but they got the right guy, so I'm really, really
excited. You know who I think would have been awesome in that role?
Who?
And he came from that whole Minneapolis sound era and group. He was once with, I believe he was with Prince for a while, and he was with The Time.
Are you talking about Morris Day?
What's that?
Morris Day?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Jesse Johnson.
Yeah, I would have gone there. He's got that look. It's either him or Stoney Jackson.
I don't understand why Stoney gets such a bad rap. Stoney was a pretty good actor.
Listen to me, folks. If you don't know who he is, look him up. Stoney Jackson. Famous, famous B actor. I loved Stoney Jackson back in the days. He was
Stoney Jackson was a good actor. You put him in any role, he played it to the hilt.
Well, okay, if you want to remember Stoney Jackson, the best place to remember him, he was the guy who played Wacky D in the movie CB4 by Chris Rock. Jackson. So if you don't remember him and you remember the movie CB4.
You know who I thought you were talking about?
Who was I talking about? He used to be on 227.
He used to be on what?
227.
Stoney Jackson.
Yeah, he was like a recurring character.
Yeah, recurring out character, and he was actually in the last couple of seasons of 227 before it was canceled.
Was he the one when I was in love with Brenda?
No.
I don't know what happened to that guy.
Nobody knows what happened to him.
Because I think he could have played it as well. But no, I was thinking when you said Sonny Jackson, for some reason, I'm thinking about the black kid from Welcome Matt Carter that played Joe Jackson as well.
Okay, isn't it Isaac Washington?
Isaac Washington.
That's Isaac Washington. Yeah, he's from Cooley High.
Wait, wasn't that his character?
Yeah, that's right. I think you're right.
Isaac Boom Boom Washington.
That's exactly what his character's name was. Isaac Boom Boom Washington. I can't believe I remember that. Okay, listen. I want to.
What was his name?
I don't remember that.
Well, he played Joe Jackson.
I want to bring this up. I want to play this audio clip from you. It's from yesterday's O'Reilly Factor. James, I know you don't know much about this story. You probably heard a little bit about it, but it happened down in the Norfolk, Virginia area.
Okay.
Here where you are. Now, two reporters from the Virginia Pilot were coming home late at night from a play or a show, and they drove to an intersection where there were 100 black people crossing the street. The two Virginia Pilot reporters...
Wait a minute, 100 black people?
100 black people were walking together crossing the intersection. The two Virginia Pilot reporters were a white male and female. In fact, they were dating, or are dating. Their boyfriend and girlfriend.
They're coming back from seeing a show. While they're sitting in their car, someone from the group throws a rock at the door, at their car. The white reporter, the male, gets out of the car. He's surrounded by a subgroup. About 30 people surround him. Reports say anywhere between 5 and 15 people jumped him and started beating him up. His girlfriend screams, calls 911, gets out of the car to try to help him. They then start pulling her hair and beating her up. There is a police report that is put out, and it is considered a biased crime, according to the police report. When the police are contacted about this biased crime, the police department claims that that was a misstatement, and it was not ruled a biased crime, just a simple assault. One 16-year-old has been arrested, and the newspaper they work for, the Virginia Pilot, didn't report the story until 2 weeks later, even though their own two reporters had to take off a week from work to care for their injuries. It is believed that the reason why the Virginia Pilot did not report the story is because the assailants were black and the victims were white. And many people in the group called it a retaliation to the Trayvon Martin shooting. There were witnesses who claimed, yes, witnesses who claimed, black witnesses claimed that there were people saying and uttering Trayvon Martin after the assault. Now, there, no one in the mainstream media has reported this except the O'Reilly Factor. No other news out have reported this story.
Yeah, but that's like an old story, though.
Oh, you know what?
Wait. Hold on. I'm going to play this audio clip, and I want your response. What do you think of what Bernie Goldberg says about why it wasn't reported? Now, if you don't know who Bernie Goldberg is, Bernie Goldberg is a 12-time Emmy Award-winning journalist who's worked at CBS, and he's on Real Sports with Brian Gumbel.
Oh.
Okay? Listen to what he says in the O'Reilly Factor yesterday as to why he believes that it wasn't reported.
Let's take this one step at a time. As you correctly said in the memo, if this were a gang of white people who attacked a young black man and woman, everybody agrees that would be news. But when it was a gang of black people, it wasn't news. Why's that? Well, it must have something to do with the race of the assailants. So here's what it's really about, Bill. Here's what it's really about. It goes beyond journalism. It's a much bigger issue. It's about white, usually white liberal paternalism, where they say, well, we really can't hold black people up to the same standards as we hold white people up to. That's why we're not putting it in the paper. They're different. So two things happen after that. One, the newspaper, the media, they don't want to air that kind of dirty laundry because it's kind of embarrassing to the black community. And two, they don't want to give ammunition to the bigots who probably would say, you see, that's how they all behave. Now, look, we detest the bigots. But a newspaper has a responsibility to cover legitimate news. And if it's news, if a white gang beats up a black couple, then it's also news if a black gang beats up a white.
Okay. So you heard what he had to say. It's news no matter what it is on either side. It's news. It's a news story. It's newsworthy. But do you agree with why he believes why it wasn't reported? James, I'll let you go first.
First, I believe it wasn't reported because it just sounds weird. 100 black people are crossing the street all at the same time. How did they know it was 100 black people?
Well, actually, every witness says it was a large group. Everyone says.
A large group, but you said it when you started it was 100.
Yes, exactly.
100.
Yes, but hold on. No one says that 100 people beat them up. Nobody said that. It was 100.
No, but 100 black people crossing the street.
They were all right. Walking together in at a late night. Forget
right.
About the 100 people.
Just.
Are you saying
the
that the story is a lie?
Wait.
Are you saying that the story is a lie because you can't believe 100 people would be walking together? I mean, really, is that where you're going with this? I'm talking about the fact that it was reported that from 5 to 15 black people beat up on a white man and a white girl. I'm asking you whether or not the reason why they didn't report it, as Bernard Goldberg explains it, do you believe he has a point or is off base?
I think he's off base. I truly do.
You said, okay, if you remember what he said, and I'm sure you do, he says that the reason why they didn't want to report it is because this is an embarrassment to black people, and you have to hold black people to a different standard. They don't know better.
You have to hold. They don't know better. You know what? Again, I don't understand that. I don't understand that anyway, because any other time, you hold black people to a different standard. When a bunch of black people get together, it's a gang, it's this, it's that. So
forget about
I don't understand why they wouldn't play it up.
Listen to me. There was a police report, there's a medical report, and there are witnesses who saw the beatdown. Jesse Waters, went and talked to kids who witnessed the beating. They are black kids, and they're young black kids. They're like 15, 16 years old. They all saw the woman get her ass kicked. They all saw the guy get her ass kicked. In fact, one black kid said, I don't even know why they hit the girl. She didn't deserve it. So these are black kids who witnessed it. So again, I asked, why didn't anybody report it? Do you think, you know they would have reported it if white people would have beat up a black man and a black woman? You know that, right?
No, I don't know that. Again, I don't know why, you know, some things are reported and some things aren't. But to say that simply because you don't want to put a black eye on black people is ridiculous.
Oh, really? James, it's a mob beating a group of people. Newspaper, hold on. The newspaper refused to report it for 2 weeks. For 2 weeks. And it's their own journalist.
Yeah. Their own paper didn't want to report it.
No. The newspaper didn't report it, and they knew that the beating was racially motivated. They knew the reporters took 2 weeks off, and they were...
Wait. The only thing... I said it was racially motivated was the fact that, you know, somebody said, Trayvon.
But, James...
Okay,
James? As a newspaper, they didn't even bother to investigate whether or not it was, as any newspaper is supposed to do. You're supposed to go out and get the facts and report them.
Well, I don't know why, but to say that it's just racially motivated, or again, because you don't want to generate bad feelings about black people.
So you don't believe that the beating was racially motivated?
I don't think the beating was racially motivated at all.
Please explain to me where you get that evidence.
Where I get that evidence? What evidence do you have that it was?
I just told you, James, that witnesses say that they were discussing...
Witnesses say they heard people shouting Trayvon.
Yeah.
But just because they were shouting Trayvon and these people happen to be white does not make it racially motivated.
Oh, my God. James, you gave less in calling George Zimmerman a racist. You gave less.
Hold on. All right. I gave less.
Yes. You gave less credence to anything I was able to say, anything I said that tried to dissuade you from believing that George Zimmerman was a racist. You said the fact that he followed him and the fact that he said these jerks keep getting away, the fact that he saw a black man in a hoodie, that he was automatically racist because he saw a black person and it was threatening. But it can't be that case when a group of blacks beat up on a white. Now, you can't have it both ways, James. I'm sorry. You don't think that there's any racial component when blacks beat up a white? There's none?
No. I didn't see that.
So how are you determining that it wasn't racially motivated when I told you that a witness and witnesses have said that they were discussing Trayvon, which is a racially charged case?
and they beat up two whites, a white man and a white woman. And there is no, you can't even give witnesses. Witnesses are calling it racially motivated. And you saying you don't think so?
What I am saying is the fact that, first and foremost, again, I'm not even going that far because, again, just how is it that somebody knew the exact number of people walking down the street?
Look, James, the people who said that they saw 100 people were witnesses, not the people who were assaulted. Not the people who were assaulted. Witnesses said it was a large group of about 100. They even went so far as to say that about 30 of them broke off and 5 to 15 people got involved. In fact, the girl reports in a police report that five people were grabbing her boyfriend and pummeling him. She counts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. She gets out the car to try to help him, and then she's attacked. Okay? They're both attacked. They both get bruises. And just to go a step further, the two had to move out of their neighborhood in Norfolk, Virginia, because they're receiving death threats.
Really?
Is it racially motivated now, James?
Yeah, it is.
All right. Thank you. Now, JC, what do you think of Bernie Goldberg's statement? Do you believe that they don't want any part of this story because it's an embarrassment to blacks and they hold blacks to a different standard in the media?
No, I mean,
while it is a compelling story, I still take a little back to whether they could sell commercial time off of it, especially in these times of Trayvon Martin. I don't. Probably one of the least things that they would want to put on TV, because the general public would begin to feel as though you're only putting that on to combat what's been going on with Trayvon Martin. So yeah.
Exactly. They would be suspicious. And I'm glad you
Yeah, they would
that.
Be suspicious about
they
it.
They would be suspicious. Is the media trying to now draw attention in the other direction after Trayvon Martin? That's a valid point. I give you that. I can only believe that there's a motivation to say, hey, black people, you got Trayvon, well, now we're going to one-up you with some black people who assaulted a white person. See, it goes both ways. And out of fear of that, of what the retribution would be, that's a great perception of this. I believe that there are people out there who would see it that way.
I can't say that there aren't people who are going to see it that way, but everybody's going to see it that way.
Oh, I agree. I believe that there are going to be some people out there going, oh, now they don't like the fact that we rallied about Trayvon. Now they're going to try to make all black people look bad to justify the Trayvon shooting. That's what they're in fear of. I have a strong belief in that. Now, what do you believe about...
There's also strong belief that everybody's trying to justify George Zimmerman while making the victim...
Well, how would you say that? Because how could you say that? Because the only people who have there's been very few. The only people who have been fairly talking about this story is the electronic media, not the broadcast news. The broadcast news, as I told you, Matt Gutman of ABC News tweeted on March 13th.
Whatever, whoever is doing it, there is still
Matt Gutman already
general
served
push to make it seem as if George Zimmerman is just totally innocent. They've gone into...
Nobody has done that in the news media. Nobody in the mainstream news media has done that. When Matt Gutman of ABC News, who's been covering the story from back to front, tweets on his own personal account that George Zimmerman killed Trayvon because he was black before he knew any of the facts, we understand what side of this he's on. He's already pretty much convicted the guy of a racially biased shooting. Okay? This is a news reporter who should know better. So the media is already, they're lined up. MSNBC, they've got Al Sharpton out in Florida holding rallies and then doing live broadcasts on his own MSNBC show. Conflict of interest? Maybe?
Well, we all knew that was going to happen.
Well, hello? That's a conflict of interest. Okay? Everybody on MSNBC said George Zimmerman was a racist who killed him. That's it. Everybody on MSNBC. The cable arm of NBC News. ABC's got Matt Gutman and CBS went right into toe and said that this was racially motivated. They had Michael Eric Dyson and Torre Bob Seifert's not Meet the Press. What is it? I forget. George Seifert's darn. Bob Seifert's Face the Nation. Had him on there calling it a racially motivated shooting. So they've already lined up who it is that they are. So mainstream media has already condemned George Zimmerman. So through reporting this story, nobody would have believed that it would have been a tete-a-tete in any way. They would have just been reporting the news. At least that's the way that I see it. So what do you think about
that? I can't see that, because if they were so motivated to make this about a racial case, all right, on the other, here it is, there is a group of people, and it's sort of on the opposite side of the spectrum, then why wouldn't they play it up that all right, well, then they did it in response to
First of all, nobody's going to believe that. Two NBC producers have been fired because of a selective editing on the George Zimmerman 911 call, and an NBC producer in Orlando, Florida, has been fired for doing the same thing. Okay, so NBC had to fire three guys for selectively editing the George Zimmerman.
Okay, so now the print media is a small community in and of itself.
Print,
all right, there's not much that happens in the print media in the print community.
The New York Times, the number two newspaper in the country, number two used to be number one, number two newspaper in the country. All the news that's fit to print. When they found out that George Zimmerman was part Peruvian, they still reported him as a white Hispanic. Who is a white? They've never described anybody as a white Hispanic. Why? To play up the narrative that he was white still. He's still white because he's a white Hispanic. When does that ever happen? In that case, Barack Obama is a white black man. If we're following the same template. So you can't tell me that anybody would have viewed this in any other way other than reporting the news. Because the media had already condemned George Zimmerman as a murderer. And I just explained to you.
And again, so you have to understand, with all of this, and then the Rupert Murdoch thing, all right, there's a general consensus that, you know what, let's just not, right, because it's a powder keg, it could go either way, we don't know, so let's just not. Look at what's happened so far.
I don't believe that. Okay, but briefly before we go to break, answer this
question. They wouldn't? You think with everything that's happened now, they wouldn't want to think about that?
That's why, look, I have a tendency to believe what JC said, but on the same level, I have a tendency to believe what Bernard Goldberg said. But JC still brings up a very valid point that some people may view this, and people who are not sophisticated enough to see that this is a news story, they would view it as some sort of conspiracy. But let me ask the last point. The second point he makes about bigots, about the news media feeling as though they give ammunition to bigots. Do you agree with that?
They give ammunition to bigots?
Like covering this story would give ammunition to bigots who would then say, see, this is how they all act.
Well, yeah.
So you believe that that's what it would do, right?
Well, I mean, it's been proven out. But then again, if that's the case, then don't report the news anyway. No matter what you do, there's always going to be bigots who's going to take their little piece here and their little piece there.
That's exactly right, James. That's right. It's damn if you do, damn if you don't. That's why you're supposed to be impartial. Now let me ask JC. JC, what do you think about that component about the bigots?
The component about the bigots.
Do you think that this would give ammunition to the bigots and that's why they may have a concern?
Yeah, to a degree.
Okay.
Yeah.
The reason why I don't agree with part two, and it's a very simple reason, They already report on gang violence, shootings in poor black neighborhoods. The bigots already have their ammunition. Okay? And that's why it's bogus. They already have their ammunition. The news media is already showing that black people are killing black people in the street. They show news reports of murders and shootings. Somebody gets shot. A pregnant woman gets stabbed. A 6-year-old girl gets hit by a random bullet. The bigots already have their ammunition. So that's why I don't believe point number two. If the bigots wanted ammunition, they already had it with the constant reporting of inner city shootings every day on the news. That's why I think it's bogus. Valid or not?
Well, valid. But conversely, you also have to think that if we go by what you have said before, if they're trying to generate this narrative, okay, they can't then give ammunition to that that takes away from that narrative.
I don't know. I still agree that, you know, and again, I'm gonna go half and half with it. I'm gonna go point one of Bernard and part two being with JC. I believe that they were worried about a backlash, that they were trying to change up the storyline, getting white people outraged at black people, and they were afraid that that was going to backfire. I agree with that, but, you know, what are you going to do? We'll see how far this goes because, you know, it doesn't look like... I see you didn't even know about it, James, and it's right near you. The story was right near you.
I didn't know about this at all. I didn't hear about it, so...
It happened in your own backyard, James.
Yeah, it's in my own backyard. It's in my own backyard, so... Again, so I have to agree with you. There is a push somewhere around there because when I walk outside my door, nobody else is talking about it.
I'll tell you another part that's scary, James. When the local news down there, I think it was the ABC News affiliate down there. I don't know what station that is, but the ABC News affiliate down there talked to people in the neighborhood. They talked to young black kids in the neighborhood. Do you know what they said?
What?
They said... That's how it is when you come around here. We protect our turf. If you ain't from around here, you ain't supposed to be around here. They pretty much told them, if you ain't from around here, something going to happen to you. That's what the black kids said in the neighborhood. If you ain't from around here, you're going to get in trouble. That's what they said. Hey.
Well, you know what? Gang affiliation, whatever. If you're not from their block, you haven't grown up in a couple of years. This is nothing new.
I know it's nothing new. I know. That's just animals, son. It's just animals.
We've been struggling with this for years. Just because this one case happens to be a flashpoint, and now there's a light shining on the rest of it, doesn't mean that the rest of it hasn't happened already and it's not still happening.
I know. I agree. But I'm just saying the newspaper had an obligation to report it. Even and especially because it was their own two reporters, for crying out loud. If the reporter had been caught up in a money laundering scheme, if the reporter had been caught up in a porn on his computer, if the reporter had beat
up... I find it very telling that their own paper didn't want to report it either.
That's... And
there's,
you know,
there's something more to this than just racial.
Oh, listen to me. It was so horrible... Yesterday when they interviewed the editor of the paper, and he said, and I quote, "I don't know if it was racially motivated." You're the editor of a newspaper, doofus. Your job is to investigate.
Well, at least he was honest.
Wait,
I don't know.
Listen, Jesse Waters was down there for one day from the O'Reilly Factor. He was down there one day.
Isn't she leaving to go to New York tomorrow?
And he had more info than this guy had in 2 weeks. Jesse Waters was down there for a day and had talked to witnesses and had more information that it was racially biased than the editor of the local paper.
And then, you know, with the witnesses and everything like that, you know what? When you put a microphone and a camera in somebody's face, people change. All right? And always, you know, there's not always...
Hold on. Let me interject here real quick for a second, if I could. We're talking about newspaper.
Yes.
Correct?
Well, okay. Newspaper.
Okay, well, newspaper, you have to be extra,
but you still,
super...
The thing you tell them is...
You know, wait. In a newspaper, you have to be extra super careful that you don't slander or libel anyone.
Because there's so many few being sold now, they're all running out. They're all shutting down.
That's right. All he had to do, he is the local paper. He did nothing.
They're shutting down everywhere.
He did nothing to repair his story. He avoided it like the plague. And it's disgusting. Anyway, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll finish it up in the last half hour of Reese on the Radio. Stick around. Here's Bernie Goldberg again.
Let's take this one step at a time. As you correctly said in the memo, if this were a gang of white people who attacked a young black man and woman, everybody agrees that would be news. But when it was a gang of black people, it wasn't news. Why is that? Well, it must have something to do with the race of the assailants. So here's what it's really about, Bill. Here's what it's really about. It goes beyond journalism. It's a much bigger issue. It's about white, usually white liberal paternalism, where they say, well, we really can't hold black people up to the same standards as we hold white people up to. That's why...
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward in the state of our union history.
Three years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours. A great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on the Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
All over my face. What is a boy to do?
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
Reese on the Radio, and we're back. 19 minutes before the top of the hour on this terrible Tuesday, May the 8th, 2012. Okay. Sometimes when you read something, you have to wonder where the source is. What I'm about to read to you is very real. I'm almost weirded out by even looking at this. But this is what it says. Okay.
Usually when you're a little jumpy at something like this, it has to be something serious or good.
No, it's really, really serious, my man. Okay. Just wait for it. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Whether or not your mom's on Twitter, here's something guaranteed to make her smile on Sunday. From now until Thursday at midnight, you can have a chance to win this special gift for the mother in your life. Just get 5 or more donations to your grassroots fundraising page to automatically put yourself in the running. If you don't have a page, you can set up one here, a Twitter page. That's right. If your name is drawn, we will send your mother a special shout out. With more than 15 million people following on Twitter, she'll be honored in front of a pretty wide audience. Even if your mom doesn't have an account, she'll still be getting a personal note from the President of the United States. I swear for God. That's right. The President of the United States is raffling off a shout out on Twitter if you give 5 donations before Thursday to one of your grassroots fundraising organizations. It will put you in the running to get a shout out from President Barack Obama. I swear for God. I swear for God, you can get a shout out from the president on Twitter. I swear for God. Is this Negro desperate or what? First, it's $3 dinner with George Clooney, and now he's raffling off Twitter shout outs that you know he doesn't even write. Someone else writes it for him. Who's the winner? You know the winner's going to be pulled by some intern. The intern just so the winner. Go to his Twitter account. Maybelle King.
Barack Obama would like to wish a happy birthday to Mabel King. And 16 million people will see it. She'll feel... Well, sorry, Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day. Thank you for correcting me. Happy Mother's Day from Barack Obama. And that's what she gets for her donation? Come on. A shout-out from the president. Come on. JC. Help
wow.
me out here.
Well, I guess that idea. My mom's gone.
Oh, we got Obama's favorite surrogate, Derek the Bounty Hunter. Come on, my man. What's the man doing?
You know, what do you mean? What are you talking about? First of all, you know, when you go to these fundraisers, let's just say you go to the Romney fundraiser dinner. Dude, it's still a piece of chicken, dude. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you're going to pay $30,000 or $40,000 to go to the dinner. It's still a piece of chicken, man. Come on, bro.
Wait. You're throwing your support, but you look desperate.
And that's all it is support, too.
Wait. Come on, man. Shout-outs? You're selling shout-outs, my man, on a Twitter account?
Hey. When Jerry Springer was on Dancing with the Stars, he was on there for 5 weeks, right? What do you think? Because Jerry could dance good? No, man. People just called in for it, man.
That's
it's all
fine
just support,
and, oh, that's
man.
Fine and dandy. That's fine and dandy, Derek. But the bottom line is, couldn't you offer a little more for your donation other than some intern to put your name on a Twitter? Because you know it's not Obama putting your name on there. How about a personal message on, like, a video? Hey, I'm Barack Obama. Hey, Mabel King, happy Mother's Day to you. Now, that's a key thing.
Excuse me, she's gone, too. Respect her.
What?
Look, you know, it's all just a random thing anyway. Come on,
it's
now.
It's a $3 raffle to have dinner with him and George.
That's $3, man. Come on, you're sitting over here making it seem like it's a bunch of money. Come on, man. What do you expect for $3, man? You can't go to the movies for $3.
It's $3 or more, by the way. You know nobody who puts in $3. He's desperate, my man. In the Rasmussen poll, he's plummeting. Today, Romney is in the lead by 49-45. He's plummeting. In independence, Romney's got a double-digit lead.
Who do they poll on top of that, man? Come on, man.
What are you talking about? Rasmussen is a liberal polling site.
Dude, who the hell is Rasmussen? I never spoke to that dude. Yeah, he don't spoke to nobody.
Rasmussen has been around since the
70s. Like I said, who is he? And I've been around since 71. I never spoke to this man before.
How about the Gallup poll or the Quinnipiac poll?
When is the last time you spoke to Rasmussen?
David Rasmussen's on TV all the time.
It sounds like Rasputin, man. Who are you talking about, man?
The Rasmussen poll is a legitimate poll. It's a liberal poll, and he's losing.
I never heard of him before in my life.
Are you telling me that because you've never heard of him, it's legitimate, Derek? I can fill the room with what you don't know.
Dude, like I said, man, and these polls, I've never got polled by any of these people's polls my whole life. You know? So
what,
on,
Eric? They don't, that, which clearly
on,
it means that you don't need
come
them.
On, man.
I'm sure some of your favorite TV shows have been canceled and you watched it every week.
Come on, man.
Get used to it. Your man is losing. He's pulling out all the stops. He's desperate.
Dude. Like I said, man, you know what, man, and you, the thing that kills me about you with your support for Romney, you hold your nose and do it. Man, I know you didn't like this, dude.
No, listen.
Don't even come with it.
You're
100. You sit over here. How am I supposed to support this guy when his religion tells me I got the Mark of Cain, dude? Come on, I never support that guy, man.
You got to
give me a break, man.
During the 2008 election, I railed against Romney. I was one of the most ardent haters of Romney. But
in a state where he was a governor.
That's right. In a state where he was a governor.
You're holding your nose and voting for him, dude.
Guess what?
Because you know it stinks.
What? Everybody knows that Romney is anything better than Obama.
Oh, whatever, dude. Whatever.
But put an H on your chest and handle it. You know he's going to lose. And
no,
I know
I don't think so, believe it.
No, you don't have to think. It's something that we know.
You know what, man? I'm serious. You know, somebody, you know, I was just watching this political show that said that there was zero job growth from 1999 to 2009. And, you know, that meant, and, you know, and the Republicans ran that for 8 years. How can I go ahead and in good conscience?
Wait. Who said that there was zero? Wait.
The White House,
What political show did you watch?
There was zero job growth. You could look that stat up. Zero job growth the entire time George Bush was in office.
What?
The entire time, dude. The entire time.
What show did you see that on?
Dude, the entire time there was no zero. So you're going to sit there and tell me there was job growth during the George Bush era? When?
There was. Derek,
when?
What was the unemployment rate in 2004, 2005?
Dude,
what was the unemployment rate,
Derek? Job growth for 10 years, dude.
Derek, what
zero
was
job growth for 10 years.
Derek, what
and
was
And it over was George Bush, man. That's a fact.
Derek,
you know
Derek, what was the unemployment rate in 2005?
Dude, I'm not sure exactly sure number-wise, but I'm telling you,
I know
there
it was
zero job growth, man.
I just said I know
zero
it was.
Job growth. I know you've heard that before.
No, I've
zero
never heard
job
that.
Growth, bro.
Never heard that
zero
before, Derek.
Job growth.
Derek, I've never heard that before. How could that be zero
job growth? Oh, lying, man.
Well, after September 11th, the unemployment rate didn't go to 7%?
No.
No, answer the question, Derek. Did it go to 7% after September 11th?
I'm not exactly sure, bro.
Did the stocks plummet after September 11th, Derek?
Yes.
Yeah. What was unemployment 3 years later, Derek?
Dude.
4.9%, Derek.
Dude.
What is that considered when unemployment is at
4%? And you know what, though? But you know what, before he went out of office, that almost doubled, dude. So what are you talking about here?
That's
come on now.
Say that. And when did unemployment go up, Derek? After 2007? Huh?
Down.
Unemployment went up.
It went up significantly, bro. Significantly.
Why did it go up, Derek?
Because George Bush ran the economy into the toilet, man.
He didn't have to
pay with you cannot pay for wars with tax cuts, bro.
You can't do it. Hold on. So you mean to tell me that a lame duck president with senators and Congress, a Senate Majority Leader and a Speaker of the House, both Democrats. He's a lame duck president. He's the one that put it in the tank?
Dude.
No, explain it to me, Derek. Explain to me how it works.
You see how you weasel out of that thing? From the president to congressman, dude, man, under George Bush's leadership, the economy went to the toilet. The last election, they wouldn't even let him speak, man. They treated him like that damn little black secret in the white family, dog. Come on, you know that, man. You know that, dude.
You gotta give me a chance.
You know that, man. He's embarrassing. He was that bad of a president, man.
I have to put you on hold. You can listen to me, Derek. I'm gonna ask you one time, seriously. Are you telling me that a Republican president signed bills into law without the House of Representatives or Congress? Are you telling me that George W. Bush put in financial regulation as a president of the United States without the backing of a Senate or a House of Representatives? Are you telling me that Bush's policies got passed through a Democratic House, a Democratic majority House, and a Democrat majority Senate for 2 years? And that's what screwed up the economy, Derek? Is that what you're telling me?
Dude, we fought these wars.
Can you answer the question, Derek? We fought the wars that 77 members of Congress voted for. John Kerry and Hillary Clinton as well. That's right. Signed off on the wars in 2003. Signed off on the wars. It was a 77-23 vote for the war in Iraq. Anybody remember that?
I remember y'all getting Colin Powell up there and showing me all these mobile labs that, you know, supposedly they were making these weapons of mass destruction.
I'm so glad you brought up weapons of mass destruction, Derek. Oh, I love it.
So weapons of mass destruction, huh? Weapons of mass destruction. I'm so glad you brought that up. Let's see if I can find Bill Clinton. Let me see. Clinton. Let's see if I can find Clinton talking about weapons of mass destruction. Let's see here. C-L-I-N. Let's see. Oh, here it is. President Clinton, February 17th, 1998.
Now, let me say to all of you here, as all of you know, the weightiest decision any president ever has to make is to send our troops into harm's way. And force can never be the first answer, but sometimes it's the only answer. You are the best prepared, best equipped, best trained fighting force in the world. And should it prove necessary for me to exercise the option of force, your commanders will do everything they can to protect the safety of all the men and women under their command. No military action, however, is risk-free. I know that the people we may call upon in uniform are ready. The American people have to be ready as well. Dealing with Saddam Hussein requires constant vigilance. We have seen that constant vigilance pays off. But it requires constant vigilance. Since the Gulf War, we have pushed back every time Saddam has posed a threat. When Baghdad plotted to assassinate former President Bush, we struck hard at Iraq's intelligence headquarters. When Saddam threatened another invasion by massing his troops in Kuwait along the Kuwaiti border in 1994, we immediately deployed our troops, our ships, our planes, and Saddam backed down. When Saddam forcefully occupied Erbil in northern Iraq, we broadened our control over Iraq's skies by extending the no-fly zone. But there is no better example, again I say, than the UN weapons inspection system itself. Yes, he has tried to thwart it in every conceivable way, but the discipline, determination, year-in, year-out effort of these weapons inspectors is doing the job. And we seek to finish the job. Let there be no doubt, we are prepared to act. But Saddam Hussein could end this crisis tomorrow simply by letting the weapons inspectors complete their mission. He made a solemn commitment to the international community to do that and to give up his weapons of mass destruction a long time ago now.
So there it is, Bill Clinton, February 17th, 1998, saying that Saddam Hussein has been given many chances to give up his weapons of mass destruction. Derek, I'll give you the last word and we'll end the show.
Dude, like I said, man, my thing is... Okay, Clinton, because Clinton wasn't in office anymore. George Bush was, right? And that was his... hold on a second. That was his administration that showed the pictures with the mobile labs and everything, right? So, I mean, come on. What Clinton said was words, okay? Your guys came out with the maps and everything.
Hold on, Derek.
I saw pictures, dude. Right, your guys broke out pictures. Here are the mobile labs leaving Baghdad here.
I'm just done. You can't tell him anything. I give him the proof. The guy says to give up his weapons of mass destruction. Bill Clinton said it, to give up. He has been given plenty of chances to give up his weapons of mass destruction. He still can't see it. Doesn't matter what proof I give. He still can't see it. I cannot believe it. Eric, come on. Last word. Go ahead. Last word.
Look, like I said, I just don't trust those Republicans, man.
The guy is saying he's about to send his...
I can't sit over here how you sit over here and say Rob Romney, what Romney's gonna do good for me, man.
Get off the subject. You brought up weapons of mass destruction, I proved you're wrong. I get it. It's okay.
No, like I said, we suspected that he had weapons of mass destruction. You guys showed proof.
Goodness gracious. We all had the same intelligence and Bill Clinton started the narrative in February of 1998.
and said he wouldn't give up his weapons of mass destruction. What more proof do you need that George W. Bush didn't start this? This is what they said. That's our show for today, folks. Derek, anything last you want to say? Barack Obama.
Donald, 20... You guys claim to have intelligence, bro. You claim to have... Dude, no. You claim to have intelligence. Like I said, y'all had aerial photos, dude.
Oh,
y'all had aerial photos. What happened to the weapon? What happened to the mobile labs? Y'all still can't show me what happened to the mobile labs, dude.
Derek.
Yeah.
That's our show for today, folks. We'll see you tomorrow. It's another Wacky Wednesday coming up right here on Arizona Radio. Have a good one. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Kool-Aid Man, Derek the Bounty Hunter, Mary, while you bugging JC. We'll see you all tomorrow.